From Parshas Chukas, we have a parsha called the Nechosh HaNechoshes, and this is in Perek Chof Aleph. The Torah says, "Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Asei lecha saraf v'simo so'al nes." Okay. So this is a parsha that follows a very difficult episode in Jewish history at the time of the Jews in the Midbar, and Jews were punished. As a result of that punishment, many Jews were dying, and we had to find a way of saving them. So Hashem commands Moshe to set up what's called a saraf. Now please note that word saraf. It doesn't say a nachash, it says saraf. V'simoso al nes, you should put this up on high. And then watch what happens in the psukim. Very strange. It says, V'haya kol nashuch, kol anashuch, anyone who is bitten. V'ra'a oso, he will see this saraf. V'chai, and he will be healed, he'll survive. So after Moshe gets his mandate, he fulfills that mandate. Fayas Moshe Nachash Nechoshes. Moshe creates this Nachash. Again, he was asked to make what? Saraf. Instead, he makes a Nachash Nechoshes, also a double language. And by the way, there's some photocopies there on the back table. And right, he puts it up on some sort of a mast. A little bit repetitive here. I mean, we've been talking about in the previous pasuk hanashuch, a person was bitten, but again the Torah repeats itself, and we'll see the Meshech Chochmah is going to make a big deal about this. V'hayayim nashach hanachash es ha'ish v'hibit El Nechash HaNechoshes V'chai. Now the Ramban wants to understand what exactly is going on over here. And he says the following. I'm just going to close this window because the noise is bothering me, and I apologize that I hope I won't get too stuffy in here, but I can't concentrate. He says the following. The Ramban says, Lo ne'mar lo lasos shel nechoshes. Now, even if I admit to you that God had asked Moshe to create a serpent, some sort of an image of a serpent, but it doesn't say that it has to be made. Hashem never commanded Moshe to make it out of copper, which is called nachash, So it's nachash, nechoshes. It's an image of a serpent, but it's made out of what?
Copper.
Out of copper. Do we have any doctors here in the audience? What is that symbol? It has a Latin word. You know what I'm talking about?
Caduceus.
It's called what?
Caduceus.
Say it one more time.
Caduceus.
Caduceus. Okay, so it's called a caduceus. Is that Latin?
I think so.
Yeah. So it comes from this parasha. Okay. And Moshe makes this caduceus out of copper. So Rashi tries to answer this question. The Ramban is not so happy about Rashi's answer. Rashi says, El Omar Moshe HaKadosh Baruch Hu Omar Lo Nachash. Hashem said, make a Nachash. Now notice that word Nachash is made up of three letters, Nachash. And the word Nechoshes is also made of four letters, but three of those four letters are identical. So Rashi says that Moshe Rabbeinu understood from the vague kind of command of Hashem that he should make it out of copper. Ani asenu shel nechoshes. Now Rashi here is quoting a Medrash Rabba, so you can't blame Rashi for this. And the Medrash Rabba says, Lashon no fail al Lashon. If I'm not mistaken, it's a little bit similar, though not identical, with something in English called onomatopoeia, if anybody remembers that. In any event, there's a certain similarity between the word nachash and the word nechoshes. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu drew the conclusion that this nachash should be made of what? Of nechoshes. Zeh Loshon Rashi, Midirei Rabboseinu. The Ramban concludes after quoting Rashi. Rashi is standing on the shoulders of Chazal. V'lo avinosi zeh. I don't chap what's going on. Sharei HaKadosh Baruch Hu lo hizkir lo nachash. God never commanded Moshe to make a nachash. You know, if Moshe heard the word nachash from Hashem and then he wanted to dash in the word with a lashon nofel al lashon and say nachash is probably from the choshes, okay, that could make any sense. But Ella, what did Hashem say to him? I say lecha saraf. Oh. So therefore, the Ramban says the following, that although a saraf means a fiery serpent, but it means a certain type of nachash. So the ikar, the primary word, would be nachash. So according to this Chazal, Moshe Rabbeinu extrapolated from the word saraf the word nachash, because a saraf is just a subcategory. It's one particular kind of a nachash. So the word for he calls it the shem etzem. The shem etzem means the real word for a serpent is not saraf. Saraf is just a kind of serpent. But what is a serpent in Lashon Kodesh? It's a nachash. So Moshe Rabbeinu made two conclusions. Yeah, it's like, you know, the yeshiva guys, they use their thumbs. So here Moshe Rabbeinu used two thumbs. With one thumb he said, well, a saraf is really fundamentally a nachash. And then with the other thumb he said, well, a nachash sounds like the word nachoshes, and therefore Moshe Rabbeinu made it a kappa. Then the Ramban says, "Va'nira bi'enai b'sod hadavar hazeh." Now, literally translated, means that I'm going to tell you what I think is the secret that sort of reveals what's going on below the surface. Now, usually, I have to tell you, as soon as I see the word "sod" in the Ramban, I close the Ramban, because after that, I have no clue what he's talking about. It's all Kabbalistic, and the Ramban was a great mystic, and I don't understand what the Ramban means when he says "sod." But here I figured out, you know what, maybe the Ramban means more than just some sort of mystical interpretation. Maybe the Ramban by sod, he means I want to tell you what's going on below the surface, but not based on mystical calculations. And he says the following, Humidarke haTorah, whenever the Torah wants to project an episode of a miracle, something supernatural, it's not just going to be a miracle, but it's going to be a miracle within a miracle. Let's see what he means by this. Tosir hanezek bamazik. The Torah uses some sort of a harmful agent to remove a harmful situation. Do you follow what I mean? No, it's normally in medicine, you know, when you look for an antidote, you look for some sort of a healing process, then you're talking about something that's antithetical to that which caused the harm. But when it comes to a miracle, the way Hashem brings about a miracle is Teirapeh HaCholi B'machloch. The paradox of the miracle is that God is going to bring about a situation where the very illness is going to be the means, to the agent, to bring about the healing process. And he gives a number of examples. For example, you remember that the Jewish people were complaining that there was no water that was drinkable. And Hashem said, go see that tree and put the tree into the water. Vayareu Hashem eats. Now that tree was a very bitter tree, and yet it sweetened the water. V'chein b'melach Elisha, malach Elisha b'mayim. Elisha needed water, and in the miracle he adds salt to the water, which is antithetical to water. He says that this is going to be a very strange kind of a counterintuitive kind of healing process, to look up at the serpent itself. Again, the serpent on a natural level is the agent of harm, and now it's going to be the agent to impact the cure. Now, why is this cure so paradoxical? And here the Ramban becomes a psychiatrist or a psychologist. And he says the following, Yodua, those who are familiar with Darkei HaRefuos, Again, the word refuah, which means medicine, in the Ramban's frame of reference, that you know, they didn't have the way we have it today, all the different disciplines of medicine. You know, medicine included anything for the health of the soul, and the Ramban himself is a great physician. He says that what you'll find out if you read the medical textbooks is that kol neshuche bale eres, that anyone who was bitten by a dangerous animal that has a certain toxic substance that enters into the body, yistaknu, they'll become absolutely on the verge of death. It's going to bring them to jeopardize their life itself. Bira osam oso, when they see the animal that created this situation, that injected its toxic substance into the body. For example, he says, Neshuche kelev hashota. Kelev hashota is what we call a rabid dog. If a person is bitten by a rabid dog, then the worst thing that you want to do for him is show him a picture of a dog. Im yabitu, if let's say he'll look at some mirror and he'll see the reflection of a kelev, of a dog, viomus, he's going to die. In other words, he's in very bad shape. He's been bitten by a rabid dog, Rachmana Litzlan. Now show him the picture of a dog, and that's going to do him under. That's going to cover him over, push him off the precipice. He's going to die. V'chein kasu v'sifrei refuos, and the Gemara also in Masechta Yuma reflects what you'll find in the books of medicine. V'chein yishmuros amarofim milahaskir b'fneim shum shem hanoshech. Not only do they have to avoid his seeing an image, a picture of that noshech, of this rabid dog, or whatever the harmful agent was, but not even to mention the name of the animal. Why? Because nafsham tidobek, their psyche gets all hung up, or shall I say, focused, what word am I looking for? Obsessed, if you will, with the machshav, with the thought of that animal. Lo titarik bimeno ad shetomis osam. It's going to literally carry them over the threshold and kill them. And he goes on and on to say that we've done experiments, or things have happened, and science has recorded this, that this is going to happen. He goes on to say, which I don't know, this I find hard to believe in medical textbooks, but he says that if a person was bitten by a rabid dog, he says if you take a collection of the person's urine, a urine culture, I didn't know that 1,000 years ago they did urine cultures, that's a chiddush to me. He says what's going to show up in the test tube, he calls it a klis chuchit, in the glass test tube, is yira b'shetan, shetan is the Hebrew word for urine, dmus gure klovim ktanen. You'll actually see in the urine some sort of image of small puppies. Okay, I don't know, I find that hard to believe, but he says, but if tavir hamayim bimatlis, if you pour the water into a cloth, this urine into the cloth, then tisanana, it will sieve out, sift out, what word am I looking for? It will remove, sift out all these puppies, you know, all these images of puppies. However, he says, "Kshachzirim leklis chuchis." If you put the urine back into its original test tube, then Shuvi says, "Tachsa v'tirasham gure klovim." He'll see the same puppies.
So it's about bacteria, maybe the shape of the bacteria.
Okay, maybe the shape of the bacteria looks like puppies. I don't know. I can't help you with this. So we'll have to. I'll have to defer to those who are experts. You know, last time I quoted anything in science had to do with the theory of relativity, I got killed for it. Okay. So I know what my bounds are. He says, "Vizeh emes miplay kochos hanefesh." Kochos hanefesh means the psyche of a human being. So, if a person was hit by a dog, you know, he was bitten by a dog, the last thing you want to do to his psyche is call his attention to focus on the dog itself. And therefore, the last thing you want to do for someone who is bitten by a serpent is to show him a picture of a serpent, an image of a serpent. But Vitziva Kodesh Baruch Hu Moshe says, make a dmus saraf, because the seraph is not only a serpent, it's a fiery serpent that has a really strong toxic, and let them look up at the images of seraph, hamemis osam, which under normal conditions, based on the biology of science, would kill him. And that's called a nes betoch nes, a miracle in a miracle, a double miracle. He goes on to describe the seraph. And he says, why does God command Moshe Rabbeinu to make an image of a seraph? He says, Nechashim Srafim, this kind of snake, is Adume Einayim. They have some sort of red-eyed fiery, you know, they're red-eyed, the bodies, I guess, are red-eyed. Rachve Harosh, they have wide heads. I'm thinking of a cobra or something, one of those kinds of Nechashim. And Gufam, their body is Ke'en Nechoshes Bitzavaram. In other words, the neck has a kind of a copper-like image or hue or color. So therefore, when you create this kind of a snake or an image of a snake from Nechoshes, from copper, copper has a certain reddish color to it, then it is very, very similar and it resembles this kind of fiery serpent, Nachash, which is called the Saraf. Lachain, therefore, lo matzah Moshe l'kayim mitzvos of the Saraf, bilti shiyaseh nachash anachoshes. Moshe Rabbeinu understood that in order to fulfill the will of God and create an image that's very similar to the serpent, he would make it in the image of a Nachash nachoshes out of copper, which was very similar to the Saraf, the most dangerous of all serpents. So in Yaseh Dover Acher, he says that if he would have used a different substance other than copper that has that reddish tone to it, that it would have been a Dmus Nachash, but it wouldn't have been a Dmus Saraf. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that we got to get the most harmful of all, you know, of all snakes, and that's going to be the Saraf. And maybe that's what Chazal meant in the Medrash that Rashi quotes of a Loshon Nofel al Loshon. Ki hazkaras Hashem bilvad tazik. Loshen to talk loshen means that the very moment you even hear the utterance of the name of this harmful being, that's already going to bring you close to death. Vaklal, but the underlying principle is tziva Hashem shisrapu, that the process of curing, of healing, should go through a mazik hamemis, through a harmful agent, which naturally b'teva would have killed a person. The Asu Dmuso Vishmo, and then a person would look up at the Nachash HaNechoshes, which is a Mazik, Legamre, and he would begin to understand that how could it be that by looking up at this Nachash, instead of dying, he would heal himself. Lo Diyam, this would transfer the message to them that Ki Hashem Meimis Umachai, that this is all because of the divine being who's in charge of giving life and the opposite of taking life. So it's very interesting that the Ramban Shita of the Nachash HaNechoshes is some sort of a supernatural, marvelous, spectacular way of bringing the Jewish people to understand that this is metaphysical. This is a spectacular beyond natural kind of healing, to make it as close as it can be to a natural kind of harmful effect that would bring a person to die, and instead, by looking at it, the person is healed.
To cure his birth and the disease.
In other words, you're going to use the natural agent of harm to be the effect of the cure, to impact the cure. And that's the greatest miracle that proves and establishes Hashem Hu Hamemis Vamachai, that God is the one who's bringing about life and not death. And you may remember that the Jewish people would look up at the Nechash HaNechoshes and they would realize that God was with them. And the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah says that it wasn't the Nachash HaNechoshes that was with them, but it was God in His miraculous way.
So now, connection. The reason why a snake's poison is what's used to create the ultimate.
Yeah, it's very interesting. My wife, when she was 8 months pregnant with our firstborn, she was bitten by a scorpion.
Yeah,
we lived in Male Adumim, not in the Male Adumim today. The old Male Adumim, which is five kilometers closer to Yericho. And the first thing they told us is make sure you get a hold of the scorpion, because from the scorpion they extract some toxin which can be used to heal her. And that's part of this. I don't know if it was metaphysical or spectacular. So Meir Simcha Mitvinsky, the Meshech Chachma, is bothered by this extra language over here, because if you'll see the language that we started with in Pasuk Hey, I'm sorry, Pasuk Ches, it says that Kol Nachush V'Rol Sobachai. And then in Pasuk Tes, the Torah repeats itself and says Im Nashach HaNachosh Es Ha'ish. So the Meshech Chachma says something amazing. I'm just pointing it out to you. I don't know that this is pshat, but that's what he wants to suggest to explain the double language here. He says, "Af im haya chola misibat tiv'it," even if he was never sick for another reason. You know, there are any number of diseases. You know, today, of course, we have new diseases that they didn't even have back in the day. And everyone, probably at my age, is already wondering which disease is ultimately going to do them under. Anyway, so the Meshech Chochmah says whatever disease a person was suffering from, via Karov Labus, and he was close to death, so then his only hope for healing would be what? To be bitten by a snake. Could you imagine? Im Noshach Oso Nachash, if A, he would be bitten by a snake, and number 2b, the bit el nachash anachoshes, he would look up at the nachash anachoshes, hayim misrapi v'shav liberio. He would be healthy, he restored to health, by looking up at the nachash, but again, only conditional if he was bitten by a nachash. And therefore, the pasuk says, v'haya kol hanachoshuch. Now the word v'haya, according to our tradition, always means v'haya b'simcha, as opposed to vayehi. Like, for example, the Megillas Esther opens up with what word? Vayehi. And that means lashon nehi, lashon lamenting, and that's more appropriate for sadness. But when it says vahaya, it's always lashon simcha. So how could the pasuk say vahaya kol anashuch? That a person was bitten by it should have said vayehi kol anashuch. So why is he besimcha? He says he's besimcha because he was bitten by a snake. And now that he was bitten by a snake, he has a chance for healing himself from the other, curing himself from the other disease, based on looking at the nachash anachoshes. Okay, Rabosai, at this point, I want to ask you the following question. And we'll see if there's anyone who can, I don't know what prize I should give them, maybe a free pizza, I don't know. I'm not signing up yet, but here's the quiz question. What happened to the Nachash HaNechoshes of Moshe Rabbeinu? Would it be cool if we could get it back? And especially if you all like Rabbi Meir Simcha, no matter what disease you're suffering from, just make sure you get bitten by a Nachash. And I think I could help arrange that. I'll need the help of a zookeeper probably. But then you'll look up at the Nachash HaNechoshes. But seriously guys, what happened to the Nachash HaNechoshes? Oh, so the pasuk says it was hidden away. Why? Because it's lezikaron. If you can read the pasuk there, I don't have it in front of me. That people should always remember this great miracle. So where is it? Maybe it's together with the man. It's in Senes Haman. Maybe it's with the Aron. And for that, we'll do Spielberg to make a movie out of it. You know, Raiders of the Lost Ark. We'll have Raiders of the Lost Nachash HaNechoshes. Okay, that's Spielberg's next movie. I predicted it.
Is the book of Sefer Cures that was hidden?
Okay, you're very, very close. The Nachash HaNechoshes was destroyed deliberately by none other than Chizkiyahu HaMelech. And that's the pasuk here that you'll see in number 4, the bottom right. Who? The word who is a reference to Chizkiyahu HaMelech. He's the king of Judah, of Yehuda. Who Heisiras HaBamos? He battled against idol worship. Shiberas HaMatzevos? He destroyed the Matzevos, the Bamos, and the Asheris of idol worship. Vekitas, and he crumbled the Nachash HaNechoshes. And you might know, well, maybe there was another Nachash HaNechoshes, but the pasuk goes out of its way. Asher Osam Moshe. Why would Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda do such a thing? I mean, I'm calling him up on the phone and I'm complaining. I want to register an official complaint. I'd like to have access to the Nachash HaNechoshes. It might help me and certainly other members of my family that I'm praying for. Because the pasuk says, "Ki ada yomim ahema hayu bnei Yisrael makatrim." Makatrim is b'loshon haktara. If anyone's learning kachim, lo. In other words, they would burn incense in front of the Nachash HaNechoshes. The Jewish people themselves were worshiping the Nachash HaNechoshes. And then the pasuk adds something very strange. The Radak is going to pick up on this. Vayikro lo, and he called the Nachash HaNechoshes, which he went ahead and he destroyed, Nechushtan. I don't know why the pasuk has to tell me that. But in any event, what it comes out is that that the king of Judah, Chizkiyahu HaMelech, who's a great tzaddik, he destroyed any symbols of idolatry, any vestige of idolatry from previous generations. And in this case, does anybody know who the father of Chizkiyahu was? His name was Achaz. Have you heard of him? He was a big Rasha. Please, don't tell me, and even if it's true, please don't tell me that anyone's named after Achaz. I hope not. Okay, Chizkiyahu is a good name. There's a street here, Chizkiyahu HaMelech. He was a great tzaddik, but his father was an idol worshiper. But not only that, his father propagated idol worship. He was a terrible rush.
Menashe,
that's already previous generations. That's the next generation. Sorry. But in the earlier generations, you had a couple of really good guys. What's the street called right here where the SOS is? Asa was one of the ancestors of Chizkiyahu HaMelech. He also destroyed idols. And his ancestor was Yehoshaphat. There's a street also here in the neighborhood called Yehoshaphat. He was also a great guy. So Baruch Hashem, we choose our names carefully. I'm on a street called Rabbi Meir. I mean, that's Gar, you know, the Holy of Holies. So the Gemara in Chulin is perplexed about the fact that it had to wait until Chizkiyahu HaMelech came in order to destroy the Nachash HaNechoshes. So that you'll see in number 5 on your page. The Gemara says the following, Efshar could be possible, Ba Asa, right? Asa came along, right? He was the forefather of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, Velo Biro, and he didn't destroy this idol that the Jewish people worship. After all, he got rid of all the Avodah Zorah. Boy Yehoshaphat, that was even an earlier ancestor of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, and he destroyed the idols. Velo Biro, and he left the Nachash HaNechoshes intact. Why did this have to wait until Chizkiyahu HaMelech would destroy the Nachash HaNechoshes? So the Gemara comes up with a brand new principle. And by the way, this principle we're going to soon see, and it's Hashem, I hope, has many, many repercussions, way, way beyond the Dalet Amos of our discussion here today about the Nachash HaNechoshes. And it's called the following, Makom hinichu lo avosav lizgader bo. I'm not going to talk about the sugi itself in Chulin. Has to do with Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. I just don't want to get off on a tangent right now, but Rabbi Yehuda Nasi applied that to himself, that there was something that he had to destroy, which his ancestors should have destroyed, but Makom Hinichulo. Makom Hinichulo means it was in divine providence that something would be left over for him. In other words, Hashem wanted Chizkiyahu HaMelech, because of his great saintliness, to merit this great mitzvah of destroying the Nachash HaNechoshes. Now, in the next source, you have the Radak. Is that so? Now, if anyone here could read the Radak, then he must have supervision. So what I did is, I should have done this for everyone, I apologize, is I blew up the Radak. Okay. I'm not going to tell you on Thursday which number I'm up to. I have a birthday coming up on Thursday. Anyway, so the Radak says the following. Again, you may be able to follow it as I read it, if you have a very good eye. And he says the following. On this pasuk, you know, the Radak is one of the super commentaries, one of the few Rishonim that we have on Tanakh. Very few. We have Rashi, but it's not the same as Rashi on Chumash. We have the Ralbag. We have a few Rishonim here and there. But the Radak is really like the kingpin, you know, on Tanakh. And he writes, Yeshmei Rabboseinu Zal Sha'amru Shochek V'zora L'ruach, that he absolutely pounded this Nachash HaNechoshes, and whatever was left, he threw to the winds. And why is that? Because we have a principle called that Avodah Zorah is Asur Behanoi. You're not allowed to get any benefit from it. So whenever we destroy an idol or anything that has the status of Avodah Zorah, we have to pound it, destroy it, crumble it into pieces, and then throw those pieces to the air, to the wind. Nehemah Amru, there are others who say, And this is another sheet in Avodah Zarah Mem Dalet. Kilo Haya Asur Ba'ano. That technically he didn't have to do this, Chizkiyo HaMelech, because it's not Asur Ba'ano. I Avodah Zarah is Asur Ba'ano. The answer is Moshe Ben Olav Lashon Mishalo Asa Oso. Let's go back to the pasuk that we started with today. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Asay Lecha. What does Lecha mean? Mishalcha. Moshe Rabbeinu had to sign the check. It was actually his. It's like under the chuppah, you know, the Masada Kedushin is going to ask the chassan, did you buy this ring with your own money? So the word lecha means that Moshe Rabbeinu bought the Nachash HaNechoshes with his own money. And therefore, even if at some point in Jewish history the Jews started Nebuch bowing down to it and attributing certain idol, you know, idolatry status to it, nevertheless, it doesn't become Asur Ba'ano. And here the Radak quotes a principle, another halachic principle that we have here, called Ein Adam Oser Dover Sheino Shalom. I don't have the power to impose through my actions an Isur Ano on something that belongs to you. In other words, a nether means I can take upon myself that if this is mine, it's Asur Ba'ano. But I can't tell you that your jacket is Asur Ba'ano. You own the jacket. I don't have. And this Nachash HaNechosh was owned by Moshe Rabbeinu, and I guess his descendants, maybe his heirs, I don't know. And therefore says the Radak, Ein Adam Oser Dover Shelo, and Bidinu, technically he would not have to destroy this Nachash HaNechosh Chizkiyo because it doesn't have the status of Avodah Zarah, because whoever worshipped it, that can't generate an Isur of Avodah Zarah, something that doesn't belong to them. Ela Kevan de Chaza Chizkiyo de Kato Yisrael Basrei. Once Chizkiyo became aware of the fact that the Jewish people were led astray to worship this Nachash HaNechoshes, Amad Vekisiso, he took his own initiative according to this Man Yomar, and he destroyed it. Now, what does the pasuk mean here? Asks the Radak. Ki ad hayomim ahema, until that time, he says the following: Me'es sheheru miloshen ra'a malche Yehuda. Let's take for example the case of Achaz, right? He was a king of Judah, and he brought the people to worship idols. V'toach re'avodah zarah ad hayomim ahema, until the time shemolach Chizkiyo ho bnei Yisrael makatrim lo. The Jewish people thought that if this can bring life, then it's a good emtza'i. You know, the Jews, by worshipping idols, were looking for a means, an intermediary, a conduit to worship God. They thought this would be a great intermediary. V'lavan osa. V'ayamunach mimos Moshe Rabbeinu zeh nachash l'zichron hanes, k'mot tzintzenes haman. V'yosef v'yoshafot shelo biruhu. Why didn't they, these great kings, Asa and Yehoshaphat, destroy this Nachash HaNechoshes? In other words, at that point in time, it was still fulfilling its original purpose as designated by Moshe l'zichron hanes. But now a new situation arose after Asa and Yehoshaphat, at the time of Achaz, when Avodah Zarah became so rampant in Chizkiyo Ra, he thought it was Kedai, it was a good idea, Leviral, so to destroy from the world. Kibimei Aviv, already at the time of his father Achaz, Hayu Ovdim also Kamo Avodah Zarah. The Afalpi Shetovim, the good guys amongst the Jewish people, Yizochrim Ba'asanes. In other words, this object called the Nachash HaNechoshes had two different impacts. For the good guys, it was a remembrance of God, who's a Mamis and Machiah, as we said before, the Ness. But for the bad guys, they said, well, this is a great intermediary to worship, and therefore they started worshiping this thing. And therefore, since Chizkiyo was in a bind, you know, every situation is what we call a thesis and antithesis. On the one hand, let's keep it alive for the good guys, but on the other hand, we're risking the jeopardy of furthering the Avodah Zarah. He made that decision. He made the call. And he says it's worth it to minimize Avodah Zarah, even if it means we're going to have to do away with this Zikara, with this memory of the Nets. And Vayikra lo Nechashtan, says Radak, why did he use this term? Nechashtan derech bizayon. That was his way of humiliating it, of downgrading it, by saying, Klomar, eino el nechoshes. This is only copper. It's like in the old days, you know, the cheapest coin in America, at least, was made of copper. Is that so for England as well?
Yeah,
the pennies are made of... Yeah. But an English penny is probably worth something. An American penny, you don't even bend down to pick it up. So there are people today who, because the value of copper has gone up on the market. This is true. So there are people who are collecting old pennies. So if you collect about 10,000 old pennies, you'll make about a penny. So it's worth collecting, right? Anyway, this is what he calls Derech Bizayon. He says, Ma koch yeshbo, as if to say, what power is invested in this object? It's only a piece of, a chashtukah, a piece of copper. Ein bo koch lahor lahetiv. And that's at the time that he destroyed the Nechash and Nechoshes, that's the name he gave it to Klomar to tell the Jewish people that it's worthless. Now, if you'll fast forward to the Gemara in Shabbos, which is number 7 on your page, the Gemara talks about another parsha in Tanakh, and this is the parsha of the Bamos. Now, this may shock you, but at the time of Shlomo HaMelech, there were Bamos that were built, and they were used for idol worship. How many of them were destroyed by Shlomo HaMelech? Zero. None of them. Shlomo HaMelech left all these Bamos. And it was way later, at the time of Asa, who took it upon himself to destroy these Bamos. No, I'm sorry. Take that back. It was at the time of Chizkiyahu HaMelech that Chizkiyahu HaMelech destroyed these Bamos.
But they couldn't use them, right? Once the Beit HaMikdash was built.
Well, again, these were Bamos that were exclusively used for idol worship. So don't ask me questions about the Bamos. These were idol worshipping Bamos. So the Gemara in Shabbos quotes a brice in the name of Rabbi Yossi. V'yasa Bamos asher al pnei Yushalayim asher miyamin lahara mishcha. Hamishcha is what we call today Har Zeisim, the Mount of Olives. And somewhere on the Har Zeisim, on the right side, they built these Bamos. And the Pasuk says, Asher Bana Shlomo. Who built these Bamos for Avodah Zarah? The Pasuk says it was Shlomo who built it. Melech Yisrael. So the Gemara asks, Efshar, the same question that we saw earlier, that was asked by the Gemara Chulin with regard to the Nechash and Nechoshes. Efshar ba'asa v'lo bir Rabbi Yoshafa v'lo bir machabo Yoshio. Oh, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. I said it was Chizkiyahu, it was Yoshio HaMelech. We have a whole kinah on Tisha B'Av for the death of Yoshio. He's maybe the greatest tzaddik since Moshe Rabbeinu. And Yoshio was the one who destroyed this. Halo kol avodazor sheber tzol asa v'yoshafa b'yarem. They made a cleansing job, what's it called, purification of Eretz Yisrael, to destroy all the idols and all the idol worshipping. Ella, but rather makish rishonim lachronim, achronim lo osu v'tolabem l'shvach, af rishonim lo osu v'tolabem l'gnai. So the Gemara says the following: it wasn't Shlomo who built these altars for Avodah Zarah; it was his wives. He married some not such kosher women. Okay, let's just leave it at that. And the Chazal blame him as if he had built these altars because he looked the other way. When his wives were building these bamos for Avodah Zarah, he didn't do anything, he didn't destroy them. So Tosis asks in Masechet Chulin, when the Gemara asks, why did we wait for Yoshio HaMelech, why couldn't the Gemara give the same answer that it gave in Chulin of Makom Hinichu Lo Lavoseinu? Meaning that even though Asa and Yehoshaphat should have destroyed these Bamos, but the Divine Providence has it to give Yoshio HaMelech, the great Yoshio, an opportunity to fulfill this mitzvah and destroy these Bamos on Avodah Zarah. So Tosfos says the following, Yesh Lomar, this is the bottom, the end of number 8, he says, the Bishlei Mahocha Gami Nachash HaNechoshes Lufisha Nas Alpi Dibur. He says, why is it that Asa and Yehoshaphat delayed, procrastinated, and they were somehow very inhibited about destroying the Nechash HaNechosh, because that Nechash HaNechosh was created Alpi Dibur. What does Alpi Dibur mean? From the divine command. It's there for Tobo. They made a mistake. Vayusvurim, they thought Osu Levarim. You're not allowed to destroy them. Again, this is not like the Radak. The Radak, if you remember, said that the reason why they didn't destroy them is because at that point in time, they did not worship the Nechash HaNechoshes. That only began at the time of Achaz. But Tosfos has another answer, that the reason why these great kings, Asa and Yehoshaphat, did not destroy the Nechash HaNechoshes is because they were afraid to touch the Nechash HaNechoshes. They thought it was untouchable, because that was created by Moshe Rabbeinu on the divine command. And therefore they came to the conclusion, the Chas Shom, we're not allowed to be Mavar them. Maybe we could make a combination, you know, a happy medium here between the Radak and Tosus, that maybe the reason why Chizkiyahu HaMelech took the initiative to destroy something, even though his ancestors were inhibited to do so, is because he saw how bad, how rampant and popular it was to use this as an idol worship. So he said, I don't care. Hashem created it, but Hashem wants me to destroy it because it's the source and the cause for Avodah Zarah. The Maldim, in his commentary on Tanakh, and again amongst the Achronim, I think he's the kingpin, on Vekites Nachash HaNechoshes, he quotes Tosfos, who says that since the Nachash HaNechoshes were created by the Dibur, by the command of God, therefore they were inhibited to destroy it. Nira Perusha, on the fourth line, he says, Ki Yesh Plukta Dechulin, there's an Achlokas on Daf Mem Aleph, in Mesech Dechulin, which I have for you here on the second side of your page, that's number 10, Rav Nachum V'Amram Rav Yitzchak Ami Ein Adam Oseh Dover She'Eino Shelo, that perhaps the reason why the earlier great kings of Israel were inhibited about destroying the Nachash HaNechoshes is because they felt it didn't have the status of Avodah Zarah. It was private property, and private property, even if it's worshipped by someone other than the owner himself, cannot someone else through his idol worship cannot generate an Isur of Avodah Zarah. So there was no status of Avodah Zarah to the Nachash HaNechoshes because Ein Adam Oser Dover She'Eino Shelo. And that's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah as well, which you'll see number 11 on your page. Ki hodi omer ulam Rabbi Yochan afal pisha omer mishtachve lebehemas chavero lo osra, but osa b'maisa osra. Only in a case where you did an action to change the object, which the Gemara in Avodah Zarah number 12 gives you a case where you change the object. You took a levena, you took a brick, and you built it into a... what would you call it? A citadel? What's the word of? I'm looking for a temple, right? You built it as a temple for idol worship, and then you went ahead and you worshipped idols. Then it becomes asura. Then it becomes prohibited. So that's only if you did a maisa. So he says the following. He says, "Mizem muchach the adam osa davashen shalom b'maisa," that I can generate an Isur on something that belongs to you, like for example, when the seven nations that occupied the land, they built asheros, and they worshipped certain trees, and the Torah says that when we, the people of Israel, enter into the land, ashreyem tisrufum ba'esh, we have to destroy them, because of the din of Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara right away asks, how could that be? They don't own these trees, because the trees grow on the land of Israel. The land of Israel belongs to us, and not to them. And Ein Adam Oseh Dover She'Eino Shelo. So now on the Malvim on the top of page 2. And he quotes the Ran in the name of the Ramban. This you'll see on number 13. Maybe since the idol worshippers did an action, like for example in the case of the Asherah, they set up the Asherah and worshipped it, or in the case of the Levena, that they built it into the structure of a temple. And the Gemara says that Rav disagrees with Ula, and he holds Ein Adam Oseh Dover She'Eino Shelo Afilu B'Maisa. So we have two shitas in the Gemara as to whether or not a person could generate an Isur on something that belongs to someone else if he does an action. Harishonim, he says, this is a suggestion of the Malbim, why was Asa and before him Yehoshaphat inhibited in destroying the Nachash HaNechoshes? Because they hold like Rav, they hold that even if you do an action, you can't prohibit something that doesn't belong to you. Chizkiyah, he was of the opinion that even if something doesn't belong to you, we have to get rid of it if it was worshipped by somebody else. For example, the kelim of Achaz, of his father Achaz, he destroyed. Why? Because when Achaz did a maisa to use those kelim as part of idol worship, That's considered Adam Osa Davar Sheni Shelo B'Maisa. So again, just to summarize, we have a number of different explanations as to why the earlier generations, that's Asa and Yehoshaphat, were inhibited, and they didn't take the initiative which was left for Chizkiyahu HaMelech to destroy the Nachash HaNechoshes. And we had the Radak's opinion that the reason why they were not interested in destroying the Nachash HaNechoshes because at that time, during their reigns, the idol worship was not as rampant. After them, at the time of Achaz, that's when they began worshipping the Nachash HaNechoshes. It was not until Chizkiyahu HaMelech's time that he would destroy the Nachash HaNechoshes. Then we have Tosis's explanation that they didn't want to destroy something that was created al pi adibur. Now we have a third explanation that maybe Ein Adam Osa Davar Sheni Shelo. And then the machlokus between Chizkiyah and his predecessors revolves around the issue of can a person, if he does a maisa, generate an Isra Avodah Zarah that has to be destroyed. And finally, we have the Ran in the name of the Ramban, and this is on the Gemara of Avodah Zarah. And he says that Omer Rav Yudah Marav Yisrael Shezokaf Leveno Lishtachvos La Uba Ovikachom Vishtachvela Asra. And this is another principle. And that principle is that if a Jew owns an object, but then he authorizes a guy to use that object for Avodah Zarah, then we apply the principle called Shlichu Sayu di Yisrael Ka'ovid. The guy is like an extended arm, almost like an agent on behalf of the owner of the Yisrael. And that could generate an Isra Avodah Zarah. V'amrinana Allah. I can't read the next word, it's too small for me. He says, Minolon di Asura Omer Abulazar. He says, Kaske Haskalosh Shalit Yisrael, Omer Achman of Ashrayan, Tisrufun Ba'esh, Michti Yerusha Hilahem. It's Mayabul Sam, it belongs to our forefathers, Veno the Ose Dover She'eno Shelo. Ella, when are we going to destroy and why are we going to destroy the Asheros? And the answer is midepolchu Yisraeli Egel, that once the Jewish people worship the Egel, they already expressed their interest in an idol worship, and now we can apply the principle of Shlichu Sayu Kavdinon. And he says that in the name of the Ramban, Hoyasagi Bibitl. He says the Ramban is perplexed. Why do we have to destroy the Asheros? Why couldn't we just do an act of bittul? Is anybody familiar with that? Yeah. If you have an idol, if you have an avodah zarah, what do?
You break it.
Exactly, you break it or you chip off a piece. That's called bittul. So why do we have to destroy the avodah zarah? And the Ran says, I think I have another answer. Because maybe if there was a maisa that was done, then we apply the principle of Adam Oser Davar Sheni Shelo. Two more sources and then we finish up. We have now the Sholumation, which is number 14. Does anybody know who authored the Sholumation? He was a yeshiva, probably the greatest yeshiva in modern history. His name was the Netziv of Valozhin. You heard of Valozhin yeshiva? Back in Litta, there was a great yeshiva, the mother of all yeshivas in Litta, that was called Valozhin. And he asks the question of, as we said before, why did the earlier kings, the great kings of Asa and Yehoshaphat, why didn't they destroy the Nachash and Nechoshes? And he says the following, that maybe they were hesitant because it was Nas al pi adibur. That's what we saw in Tosfos. He says, "Vehu tema." I don't understand this Tosfos. It's about halfway through the paragraph. It says, "Kevin de Nasa Avodah Zarah, Eich Efsha Delo Levara." Again, it's very nice svara that it was created al pi adibur. But if it's Avodah Zarah, then you have to destroy Avodah Zarah. Why wait till Chizkiyahu HaMelech? So he says that either we can apply the principle of Ein Adam Oser Davar Sheni Shelo, right? That was the logic that we saw in the Malbim, if you recall. And therefore they felt until Chizkiyahu that there was no status of Avodah Zarah, and they wouldn't want to tamper with this object, the Nechash HaNechoshes. Or maybe they felt that the only reason that we should go ahead and destroy this Avodah Zarah If we hold Adam Osa Dovashenishalo, I'm saying if we hold Ein Adam Osa Dovashenishalo, is Keva the Toe Basrei, it has to be destroyed with Pursume Misa, Milsa, in other words, to somehow publicize that we have to destroy Avodah Zarah. But he says, Guf Nechash Anachosh Slo Tzarech Sreifa Klal. So according to the strict din of destroying Avodah Zarah, Mitzad Adin, Adarav, the Nechash Anachosh has an element of Kedusha, and Eino the Osa Dovashen Shalo, and it was only the Pursume Misa, I'm sorry, the Pursume Milsa, so it was, I guess, what you call extra legal, extra halachic, meta halachic, to destroy this Avodah Zarah and make a statement here that even something that has Kedusha, and even though Eino the Osa Dovashen Shalo, since they were Nigra Basre, therefore we have to destroy it. And who is the one who came forward and had the gumption to do such a thing? That was Chizkiyo HaMelech. Now, what I said to you before is that Mokom Inichu Avoseinu, that sometimes divine providence has it such that a later generation will come up with something that really should have been crystal clear to earlier generations. And I told you that that could have halachic repercussions. I want to give you two examples. The first example is from the Radzina Rebbe with regard to Tcheles. You may know that about a century ago, one of the Hasidic giants came up with what he claims is chilazon is tcheles. So if there's certain Hasidim to this day who wear tcheles because of the Radzina Rebbe. So the Rebbe had to ask himself the following question: why am I discovering tcheles? Where were the greats before me for hundreds and thousands of years? So he, in order to justify this, he says, Mashalo his oru lazeh, this is the bottom right on page number 15, lo his oru lazeh rabosenu bidoro shilfanenu, why didn't the earlier generations figure out what tcheles is? Asher katnam ova mimasnenu, he says, I don't even size up to them. He says, ein litmor kla, why? Dematzinu, we find in Tanakh, regarding Chizkiyo HaMelech, v'kites nochash anachosh shesher osa Moshe. And the Gemara in Chulin asks, how could it be that in the earlier generations, the greats of the ancestors of Chizkiyo, namely Asa and Yoshafat, they didn't destroy it? And well, the Gemara's conclusion is, Makom Inichu Lo Avoseinu, that sometimes it's a hashgacha that Hashem wants a later generation to have a schus, to be able to rise up to a certain challenge and achieve a goal that wasn't achieved by earlier generations. And he says, Hadvarim Kal Vachomer. He says, Hasam, in the case of Nachash HaNechoshes, Hayon Michshol, this was a terrible, how do you say in English, a Michshol, something that could cause
a stumbling block.
Excellent, thank you, Jeff. A stumbling block. Hayidei Nachash, Hayon Yisrael Nechsholim Ba. And nevertheless, even though it was a terrible stumbling block, again, it's not going like the Radak, that in earlier generations it was not a stumbling block, is Loheir Hashem Yisprach Liban Shel Tzadikim. God didn't arouse or awaken the hearts of great tzadikim like us of Yeshua Levaro. Why? Kedei laniach makom lechizkio lizgadibo. Give a chance to Chizkio, who's not on the great level of the earlier generations, to destroy this object of this stumbling block of Avodah Zarah. Ve'helen mehem, and he with the capital H, he denied them the knowledge, the access to the knowledge that we are permitted and even obligated to destroy the Nachash HaNechoshes. And in a sense, he covered their eyes, as Tosfos says, to believe that since the Nachash HaNechoshes was created by Dibur, or as we saw in other situations, that maybe Eino Adam Osa Dovashen Shalo, and Hashem denied them the truth in order that in a later generation, Chizkiyo HaMelech would come and what? And rise to the occasion and destroy the Nachash HaNechoshes. Kolsh gave a kalachom, how much more so in the case of something which is not a michshol, it's just a minias mitzvahs essay, meaning God, you know, closed the eyes, so to speak, he covered the eyes of the Gedolim to find, to discover, and identify the chilazon. Okay, that's not so catastrophic. That's not like a michshol of Avodah Zarah. is he says, Kolshkein lefanenu, we have in front of us the lower generations, the later generations on a lower level, efshabut, a possibility of mitzias achilosim bizman hazeh, of discovering achilosim bizman hazeh. Why? Because makom inichu avoseinu lizgadar bo. Do you hear the kavachomer that he's making? He's justifying the fact that he has discovered that he wasn't, and the greats before him did not. He says, how much more so? In the case of the Nechash and Nechoshes, God denied the great tzaddikim access to the mitzvah, the great mitzvah of destroying a mikshal of a avodah zarah by fooling them into thinking that maybe we're not allowed to tamper with it, it's made by al pi adibur. How much more so in the case of just the menias mitzvahs asay of tcheles, that God would allow me in a later generation to discover chetchilos. So that's one case in which the halachists rely, or shall I say, invoke this principle of makom sheinichu avoseinu in order to justify a halachic decision. But I want to give you a second example. And this is the Chassam Sofer. And the Chassam Sofer has a new innovation which deviates from the Shulchan Aruch. Now keep in mind, the Shulchan Aruch predates the Chassam Sofer by 3.5 centuries. And the Shulchan Aruch is well accepted, and not only that, this particular halacha is built on Rishonim, on the Ran and the Rosh, who in turn quote the Maran Rutenberg. And here's the case. What happens, Rabosai, to our tefillah after Sukkos? What change do we have? Correct. Mashiva Ruach Morda Goshen. So we've been leaving it out, and some have a minute, that's the minute Agra, to say Morda Tal. And all of a sudden, abruptly, boom, they hit us with Mashiva Ruach Morda Goshen. So the halacha paskins that if, let's say, you daven Shmon Esrei after Sukkos, and you don't remember in your Vachadik Shmon Esrei whether you said Mashiva Ruach Morda Goshen. So what's the deal in such a suffer? Correct. Why? Because we assume you're so used to leaving it out that you forgot it. Comes along Nagos Maimonios, quoting the Maran Rutenberg, who is the Rebbe of the Rosh, and he says that if a person wants to avoid this situation of suffer, and he wants to be absolutely clear, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that he recited Mashiva Ruach Morda Goshen, then Yomar Kol Kach Pionin Ata Gibor, he should recite over and over again from Ata Gibor, the second bracha, which is called Machayim Mason, up until Machalkel Chayim, the exact repeat Mashiv Ruach Morda Goshen outside of the framework of Shmona. So you're familiar with this exercise?
Yeah.
How many times?
Yeah.
So if you take a look at Maravni, Rutenberg says you should do it the amount of times that you would have recited Shmona over a period of 30 days. Because we have a principle in halacha that 30 days establishes a chazaka, an assumption that that's what you're going to do it. And therefore, the Shulchan Aruch says you should repeat it 90 times, because you take 3 Shmon Esreis daily and you multiply it by 30 days and you get the number 90. And that's what it seems like from the Shulchan Aruch, the Magen Avraham, right down to the poskim that repeated 90 times. Comes along with some sofer with an innovation. 90 won't do it. And he goes through a very long mathematical calculation. We don't have time to go through it piece by piece. I'll just give you the flavor of it. If you want, you'll read this on your own. And he says the following. The Gemara in Masechet Hagiga tells us that the students back in the day, when they reviewed their lessons, in order to guarantee that they would not forget it, they would review their lessons 101 times. Just like everyone who does Daf Yomi reviews the Daf 101 times so that he remembers it. But that's what the Gemara says. Less than 101 times, you're not going to remember it. Comes along the Chassam Sofer and he says that if you calculate the Shmon Esreis during this 30-day period, guess what number you're going to come up with? And he works out the mathematics. 101. How does he get to the number 101? Because he says that you have to calculate Musaf, and again, he quotes Yerushalmi, that in Chutzarts they have an extra day of Yontif, Chesdeis, and he says that, okay, there's a whole discussion here about Eretz Yisrael, and he says, How many times are we going to recite Masha Meruach Mardukashim in a 30-day period, which is what the Barami Rutenberg wants you to do as an exercise, 101 times. Why? He says that there are 90 tefillos of Shachris, Mincha, Ma'ariv, and then he says there are Musafim, and he says you have to calculate the Musafim. Anyway, the magic numbers here, I'm sorry, I don't have the time to do it, is 88 plus 13. Okay? And 88 plus 13 is 101. And then he asks himself the following question. So, Halacha Maisa, what are you going to paskin? If you paskin 101, you're very satisfied because you believe that that's what it has to be. That's 30 days of davening. But if you're going to paskin 101, you're undermining the psak of the Shulchan Aruch who says 90. Now, the problem is that the Chassam Sofer is going to say if you pass 90, but you didn't get to 101, you're going to repeat Shmon Esrei. And the Shulchan Aruch is going to say you don't repeat Shmon Esrei. So does the Chassam Sofer have the plates, as we call it in Yiddish, the shoulders, you know, the chutzpah, to go against the Shulchan Aruch? So he writes in the last three lines, this is the punchline for us, he says, "Ein biyadi lifsok, I don't have the authority to paskin sheyachzor v'yispalel, that he should repeat Shmon Esrei in that 92-101 situation. Keneged Hashulchan Aruch v'Rambam, Kevin Shalom Matzoli Chaver B'Dova. I don't have another colleague who will agree with me. But Mikol Makom, I want to tell you, Nirali Yisdaiti Sheinichu Li Makom Mishamayim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw to it that this would be my place to step up to the plate and make this innovation. And therefore, I think it's got to be 101. So I can't tell you exactly what the Chassam Sofer would have said halacha l'maisa to someone who repeated Masha Meruach Mardukashim 90 times and then he forgot whether he said it or not. Would the Chassam Sofer have issued a verdict? Go ahead and repeat Shmon Esrei. I don't know. But I think the answer is yes. He would have told him to repeat Shmon Esrei. I don't know if I'm right. But what I do know is that Chassam Sofer, after this whole long presentation in which he's absolutely convinced of his logic, and then he asks himself the question, how could it be against the Shulchan Aruch? He says, I will invoke the principle of the Gemara Nechulim, which justifies Chizkiyahu HaMelech destroying the Nachash HaNechoshes, whereas Asa and Yehoshaphat before him, who were greater tzaddikim, they didn't do so, because Makom Hinichu Lavosei. And this principle means that, in my understanding, that sometimes God waits to a certain generation until someone will come forward with a tremendous amount of inspiration and conviction, and he will go ahead and do something that he feels has to be done in a very creative way, even though no one has done it before. Okay, Rabosa, we'll stop here. And I tried to put whatever I could into the time that we have, and I hope you got something out of it.
Did I miss you? You're finishing up Monday's shift?